Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. It is a distinct pleasure to call to order this first meeting of the Fredericksburg City Council, March the 3rd, 2026, in new chambers. We expect wonderful things to come out of this room for the next 50 years or so. Thank you for being here on this occasion. I call the meeting to order. We're not only in quorum, but full house. Would you please stand for the invocation delivered by Michael Bell, pastor of Christ the King Church, and remain standing for the pledges. Thank you.
Father, we thank you for this wonderful day. I thank you for this beautiful new house that we have here today. I pray that all the business that is handled today, Lord, that it would glorify you. Lord, as Christ reminds us in Matthew 28 that he has all authority, Lord, we ask that you would humble us, that we'd be humble before you to lead and govern responsibly in ways that would glorify you. I pray that everything that is brought forth, every conversation that is had, Lord, that you would give this city wisdom. I thank you for the blessing of Fredericksburg. I thank you that you've placed us here in this city and help us to take that blessing upon us and take it responsibly and let us lead and govern in a way that would honor you and be a blessing to everyone in this community. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Oh, no net. Okay. We have some very nice ceremonial matters and proclamations and an employee recognition this morning. So, item A is to presentation on development of the new city council chambers. Garrett, congratulations and thank you.
Well, thank you. Don't clap yet. It's been a long time coming, but we're happy to officially welcome the council to the new City Hall council chambers. I'd just like to take this opportunity to run through some slides, give you an update on the project itself, and then give you a little more detail on the room. So with that, if we can pull up the slideshow, just bear with us as we work through these technical issues. Looking at Aaron back there.
Is this IT doing that back in the back?
Yeah, so the IT department is in a back room through that wall, so if you see me staring at a wall, that's what's happening. So just real quickly, this space will not only be used for the city council meetings, we also plan to use it for all the boards and commissions, the joint meetings, special events, and then large city meetings. As currently configured, it can hold 70 people, but I think we can set it up where it holds up to 85. If there's ever a really large meeting, we'll be able to project what's going on in here to the community room at the other end of the hall.
Somebody need to give
this. No, Aaron's working on it.
Oh.
We tested it yesterday, and everything worked great, so apologize for this.
Garrett, did you pick the colors?
I did not. I don't know how many people were involved picking the colors, but it's referred to as Hill Country Timeless. So, all right, here we go. So as far as the overall project, the design team consists of SKT Architects with Brandon Weinheimer as the lead architect. And then Keener Engineering Services provided the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing design. For construction, Integrity Contractors is a general contractor. Their team includes It's Electric, Built on the Rocks Sheetrock, and Framing, and Alvarado. CTI has been really helpful with the audio-visual technology. San Saba Fire has been involved with the fire alarm system upgrades. And then Schneider Electric is in charge of the HVAC system. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention and thank all of the city staff members that have been involved in this project. I'm not going to read off this list, but I believe every city department has been involved in the project in some form or fashion. I did want to especially recognize Sean Dory and Seth Mellering in getting us to this point, and then also the IT department. Again, they're doing a lot of work behind the scenes to keep this thing up and running. So just a few kind of before and after pictures. Most of y'all will recall, but this used to be the Hill Country University Science Lab. So the central area was the lab itself, and then the side rooms were chemical storage areas. This is kind of the before and after floor plan for this space. So on the left is the original science lab floor plan, and then on the right is the council chambers floor plan, including the furniture. On the left is the architectural rendering that SKT put together, and then on the right is the finished product. So I think y'all will agree it turned out just like we had planned it. So I hope y'all like it. I don't know, I hope y'all had a chance to kind of walk down the corridor just outside, but Sean's done a lot of work with signage. So along the wall, there's a mayoral history going back to 1928 with pictures of all the former mayors. There's also all the former city council chamber locations. If you get a chance, take a look at the chamber locations. You can see LBJ up at the current city hall giving a press conference. We've also got pictures of the current boards and commissions. We're still lacking, I think, one photo of Market Plots or Market Square Redevelopment Commission, but we'll have that up shortly. And then in the display case, you'll recognize a lot of the same items from the current city hall, but one of the sections of the display case is going to include exhibits from the Gillespie County Historical Society. So I think that'll change out probably on a quarterly basis. As far as the overall project, so now that we've vacated the interim chambers, the contractor's blowing and going on that end of the building. You can see the main lobby is full of furniture that's been delivered. So as far as I know, all the materials for the rest of the project are on site. That's been holding us up, just waiting on materials. So everything is here now. In the middle is the former interim council chambers, which will be the community room and finance offices. And then on the right side is just an example of the offices in the north wing. That pictured is development services. A couple other projects we're working on. Chris is leading an effort to put in a rainwater harvesting system. The one that's pictured is out at the consolidated warehouse, but it'll be very similar to that. That should be in at the latest by June. I think there's a 6-week lead time for that, so it may actually be sooner. And then on the right is the Purple Martin nesting structure that y'all approved at the January 20th meeting. It's already installed between the building and the vineyard just outside. So as far as the completion date for the overall project, I checked with the contractor yesterday. They are saying substantial completion by March 26th, so 3.5 weeks away. I think it's doable now that all the materials are here, but I know Todd's looking at me here, but that is what we're shooting for and kind of planning for. So we anticipate moving City Hall operations to this facility in mid-April. So that is my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. I do want to thank the council for your patience and support through this project. It should serve the city for many years to come. So we want to thank you all.
Thank you and all the people who are involved. I do want to take a moment to express my appreciation to the council. I think Mr. Bradley was on the council when we did this, when we made the negotiation with the HCUC, which was a great decision for the community to be able to repurpose this facility for a good use and also give them the opportunity to move into another level of their mission objectives. So we're all feeling good today about what's happened in the last year or so. That's great. Thank you for everything. Clinton, thank you for your leadership. Any further comments before we move on? All right.
Mayor, if I could. I would also like to thank Garrett Bond. Garrett took this project on, much like he does a lot of special projects. He's a very busy guy. This project would not have happened without him. I doubt we would have been sitting here without his leadership and consistency in being out here and keeping the contractor on point. So thank you, Garrett, for making this project happen. Additionally, I would like to thank the council, and Randy Briley is with us today, was on the council, supported this effort moving forward to purchase this facility. And again, I agree. This is going to serve the Fredericksburg, City of Fredericksburg organization and the community for a long time to come. Thank you.
Well, let's give everybody a round of applause. Oh, we just went dark here. How are we going to know what's supposed to happen? Yeah. Okay. All right. That's fine. I know. All right, the next one is a proclamation honoring the American Red Cross. Could I have them join me at the front?
Working to install smoke alarms in people's houses that need smoke alarms so they'll be safer. So that's one of the things we do, as well as everything that the mayor said in the proclamation. And we just appreciate Gillespie County and the city of Fredericksburg because y'all are a great partner. Of course, I'm a member of the Rotary Club here. And so I feel like I'm a part of this community. And thank you so much for everything that you do in the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks again. Appreciate
thank you.
We have a recognition of our city secretary, Clinton.
Okay, Mayor and Council, it is my privilege to formally recognize our city secretary and records management officer, Leticia Vasek, for her recent achievement of recertification as a Texas registered municipal clerk. So if you would allow me. Letty has completed a milestone 7th recertification through the Texas Municipal Clerks Program at the University of North Texas, reaching 35 years in the program and a total of 38 years serving four municipal governments across the state of Texas. Anybody in the room under the age of 38? Puts that into perspective just a little bit. She's been doing this for a long time. She has served in the roles of Assistant City Secretary, Civil Service Director, Director of Administration, City Secretary, and Town Governance Officer in her 38 years of service. So the Texas Municipal Clerks Association only has two active municipal clerks in the state of Texas that have earned a seventh recertification, out of a total of 1,290 members. Recertification is required every 5 years to maintain the designation of Texas Registered Municipal Clerk. Recertification demonstrates the commitment to continuing education and ensuring effective governance in a Texas municipality. As an officer of the municipality, it is important the credentials be maintained in order to address complex issues faced by local government administrators. And Letty does a very good job of that. She keeps me up to speed on special legislation. She keeps me in line. She keeps the council updated. She provides a lot of information to all of us so that we can do our jobs. In addition, Letty has received her 35-year membership certificate from the International Institute of Municipal Clerks, IIMC, where she served as Region 4 Director from 2018 to 2022, representing Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas. The Master Municipal Clerk MMC designation is the highest credential through IIMC after earning the Certified Municipal Clerk designation. Today, there are 1,570 members out of 15,437 global members. Of the 1,507 MMCs, only 18 active municipal clerks, only 18 have achieved their 35th anniversary with IIMC. So we have one of the 18, a lot of experience, a lot of dedication to the profession. So on behalf of the City of Fredericksburg, we commend Leticia Vasek for her dedication of professionalism, development, and for her continued service to our community. Congratulations, Leticia.
Something to present her? Yes, I do. For my scrapbook.
Finally, a worthy presentation, a little bit sad. Chief Bizzle? And Frank?
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you this morning on a very special day. I wanted to recognize Frank Stead for his service to Fredericksburg Fire EMS and all the things that he has brought us forward and to be a very elite team here in Fredericksburg and Gillespie County. He's been a mentor, a friend.
His wisdom is beyond any of us in this room, in my opinion. He has very special skills that have enabled our organization to present data that was put into place to tell you our story. And that's truly what he was capable of doing. And through his help, we will continue that operations because of his mentorship with other members of our organization. He deserves this by all means. It's time for him to go do what Frank wants to do. No more getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning. No more coming to the station. No more, hey Frank. We need you. In my opinion, it's a little bit of a sad day, but we want to congratulate Frank. So at this point, I want to turn it over to Glenn Priest, who's the president of the Fredericksburg Volunteer Fire Department.
Thank you, Chief, Mayor, Council members. Frank Stead, one phrase that came to my mind when I got the letter from him that he was wanting to retire. It wasn't saying he was retiring. It was a list of everything he was doing that we needed to move forward. And it wasn't a list of everything, because we know there was a lot more he was doing. He has shoes that no one person will ever fill. We have taken him, I'd say, for granted. He's always been there. He's helped out. He's stepped up whenever we needed someone to. And I'm gonna miss having him in the meetings, because, as y'all know, having quorum, having parliamentary procedures you got to follow. If we had a question, we could look to Frank, and he would answer them. He would help us make sure we maintain a steadfast relationship. So, Frank, I do want to thank you for this, because he's not only been in the fire department, he has worked on the pension board for many years as secretary. He has helped keep that going forward. But I do appreciate the opportunity to step up here and say thank you, Frank, and thank you all for taking time to recognize Frank.
Thank you, Glenn. At this point, I will bring Amy Burrier up to read some words that we put together to describe Frank.
Good morning, everyone. Today, we're here to celebrate something rare, something earned, something displayed over time, report after report, call by call, and year after year. Today, we're here to honor Frank Stead in his 23 years of service with Fredericksburg Fire and EMS. 23 years, that's two almost three decades of missed holidays, middle-of-the-night calls, long days, hard conversations, and moments most people will never fully see or understand. It's decades of showing up, not because it was easy, but because it mattered. Frank didn't just serve in the fire service, he embodied it. He understood early on that in this job isn't just about hoses, ladders, and apparatus, it's about people. It's about trust, and it's about the quiet responsibility of being the steady presence on someone's worst day. Throughout his career, Frank has been a leader, not because of a title on a badge, but because of the examples that he set every day. Leadership isn't about rank, it's about influence, integrity, and doing what's right when nobody's watching. Frank led from the front when it was time to act. He led from beside when it was time to support, and he led from behind when it was time to let others grow. That's what mentorship looks like. There are firefighters in this department today, officers, drivers, rookies, and veterans, who are all better at their job because Frank took the time to teach them. He pulled them aside, corrected them when needed, believed in them before they even believed in themselves. You can't measure that kind of impact in statistics or words. You measure it in confidence, you measure it in culture, and you measure it in the standards that don't slip because someone like Frank made sure they never would. But Frank truly, what truly sets Frank apart is he's a servant leader. He never chased recognition, he never chased the spotlight. He showed up to serve his community, his department, and his people. For almost 23 years, Frank has carried that responsibility with humility, strength, and consistency. And here's the truth. Departments don't become strong by accident. They become strong because of people like Frank Stead. People who protect the culture, people who hold the line, and people who quietly shape the future by investing in others. Frank, your legacy isn't just in the years you gave. It's in the lives you shaped. It's in the firefighters that you mentored. It's in the standards that you set. and it's in the example that you leave behind. 23 years is a milestone, but Frank, your impact will last far longer than that. On behalf of everyone here, thank you for your service, thank you for your leadership, thank you for your mentorship, and thank you for showing us what truly matters to be a servant leader. Congratulations, Frank. You've more than earned this moment of retirement, and it's been an honor to learn from you.
So if I could get those members of our organization up here, if y'all could come up. We want to present Frank with his helmet that is truly deserved. Mayor, you can.
I'll take one separate with you.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir. So we want to present this helmet, Frank. His number was.
Frank would like to say a few words to us. Good.
Mayor, Council, it's been a pleasure to work with all of you and support you through all the years. Councilmember Klein, I am really retiring, and so next time you see me, you won't be able to say, "You still here?" When I first got into the department, we had just moved here from Ohio. I remember driving down Main Street and seeing Steve Alters driving the tender all by himself going to a fire. And I said to Carol, "What are the rest of the guys? What's going on here?" And shortly after that, Steve Evans, who was the chief at that time, ran an ad in the paper and said, "We need help." So I went to Steve and I said, "I've done this back in Ohio. I can help out, but I'm kind of old, you know. I could probably do some support type work." He said, "Frank, don't worry. We'll make you the safety officer." 3 or 4 months after that, I went back to Steve Evans, the chief, and I said, "Steve, when can I be the safety officer?" "Frank, don't worry. When enough guys show up, I won't need you to go inside for the fire." So that's how it all started. And so I really enjoyed my time here in supporting the department, being part of the department, working very closely with Glenn, president of our volunteers, of being a volunteer officer as a secretary for many, many years, and watching the department grow. We now have, as you saw, the young men and women that came up here. We have now a full-time department. We have a great recruiting class that the officers have just inaugurated in our January meeting. And I'm looking forward to seeing the department continue to grow and improve and support the citizens of this community as it has all these years. And thank you again very much, Mayor, and Chief, and all the members of the department.
Well done, Frank. Thank you. All right. So some nice ceremonial matters, employee recognitions, et cetera, to commemorate our first meeting in these new chambers. Council comments.
Thank you. I have more good news. Casa de Virales Building Trades Program at Fredericksburg High School recently won a Best in American Living Award. The Valo Award spotlights the most creative and innovative residential construction projects that redefine excellence for homes and communities around the world representing design, multifamily offsite construction, and remodeling. So the students won the judges' special award for house number 8, and they were presented with the award in Orlando. Pretty good stuff. Also, lots of CBB interviews for the new CEO. So on the 18th and 19th, we had Zoom interviews with 4 people. We narrowed that down to 3. And we had in-person interviews yesterday with 2 of them. And the 3rd candidate will come into town next Monday for their interview. That's all I got.
Just a little update from the commissioner's court. There's not only one item, and the newspaper does a good job of covering, but the main part is I talked to the chief a while ago, and they've been working on trying to get those doors in the old chamber, the old council chamber area, which is now the law enforcement for the police. They're trying to get security, and apparently they're about to proceed to do that. That would give them a separate entrance from the sheriff department, which would be more convenient from that point. The other thing I want to mention, if you haven't already, today is election day, and please go out and vote. It's the only way you can maybe just one vote, but sometimes one vote makes a difference. So go out to vote.
Good morning. I want to thank our first responders. We had a doozy of the last 2 weeks between a fire and a suspicious package. Thank you for keeping us safe. I got to go to D.C. last week for work, and we met with our congressman and Texas delegation, as well as our U.S. senators. And anytime someone would hear that I'm from Fredericksburg, the response is always, "Wow, what a great place. I was just there a couple weeks ago. It's wonderful. You really have something going there." So sometimes it's good to get out of town and get a perspective. It's a wonderful place we have here. A little bit more. So today's election day for all the big wigs. But in 60 days is the city election and the school district election. You have 30 days to register to vote in that election. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. Just one thing. I attended the EDC meeting on the 20th of February. I'm not going to report anything because Tim's here and he's going to say everything, and I'd probably mess it up anyway. But welcome to the new chambers. We're excited about this. Thank you, Garrett, and everyone involved. And also congratulations to Frank for his retirement. What a great job he's done. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Council. We'll move to item number 6, which is a consent agenda. Only one item on there is the approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of February 17th.
I so move.
Second.
Moved and second to approve this as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. Section 7, ordinances, resolutions, and public hearings. Let's consider an ordinance amending Chapter 5, Buildings and Building Regulations, Chapter 17, Fire Protection of the City Code, to adopt the ICC. Mr. Cross?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good morning to you, Mayor and City Council. I'm glad to be in the new chambers like everyone else. This is a beautiful setting. So, as you know, Development Services, we've been moving forward with the adoption of several new ordinances. Specifically, the UDC will be coming to you in the near future, which will address a lot of our long-range planning and comprehensive plan development as we move forward. However, we are working on some cleanup within the department to bring our daily codes up to date, and specifically one of the big ones that we have been working on, we're glad to present to you this morning, is the adoption of the new ICC codes, or the most recent 2021s. I know the 24s are out, but we generally try to stay within 2 cycles. So what we are bringing to you here this morning is an amendment to Chapter 5 of the Municipal Code, which addresses building and building regulations, and Chapter 17, which is your fire code. Specifically, what we are doing is presenting an adoption of the 2021 ICC codes that will replace the current 2015 ICC codes. And there's really not as much to it is what a lot of people think when you're adopting these. We will adopt these in their entirety. For example, one of the ones we've talked about adopting is the IRC. It's a pre-written code that addresses the construction of one and two family dwellings. So we are adopting that in its entirety and will ultimately, in the future, as we move forward and do cleanups, bring amendments to each of these to clean them up down the line. But we felt like it was very important to bring the code series in its entirety to you, adopt the 2021s. And why is that so important? Because it can impact your insurance service organization ratings, and ultimately it could potentially impact insurance premiums for your constituents in the community as a whole, in that when you have the most recent codes, or at least within two cycles, they give you credit for that, so to speak, which could ultimately result in reduced insurance premiums. So what are the specifics of the ordinance amendment? As you'll see in the ordinance, we brought you various sections within that. For example, in Section 2, you'll see that we are proposing to adopt the 2021 International Building Code, including the appendices A, C, D, and F, and the International Residential Code 2021, including appendices E, G, and J as well. The purpose of this is, like I said, bring in the 2021 codes. Not a lot of changes is going to happen in terms of daily activities. These codes are very similar to what we already have in place. They just are the updated model, so to speak. We did feel like we needed to do a couple of amendments in addition to that in Chapter 5, and specifically pertaining to the appeal process, where if someone is aggrieved by the determination of the building commissioner, they can seek an appeal of that determination going in front of the zoning board of adjustment. Sounds like it went dead for a minute, but in front of the ZBA. It also does provide provision for a variance to the provisions of the code if there is some sort of unique circumstance with an individual property. The other big thing in addition to that, so this will pertain to the mechanical code, the plumbing code, the electrical code, and then the IRC and the IBC. One thing that is not in here that we will bring back eventually, and it's never been adopted by the city, they do have a series within this. They do have an IEBC, which is the International Existing Building Code, which I'm surprised we've never had, because we're the age of the community and the significant number of older buildings, but that primarily pertains to change of occupancy class. So that is something we'll bring back in the future and talk to you about. The other big thing, and I know Reagan is here, if he has any comments he wants to add, in Chapter 17, we will be adopting the 2021, or asking for you to adopt the 2021 fire code as part of that ICC series. Very similar with the same appendices that we already have in place, no significant changes. I know there's some development standards that are specific that will still remain consistent. If you have any questions, I know Reagan's here to address them as well. So based upon that, we are bringing this to you to ask for adoption of this ordinance to move forward with the 2021 codes. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Reagan, did you want to provide any further information?
No, sir. I'm
you're good. Okay. Questions, counsel? All right.
I'll make a motion to approve as presented.
Second.
Motion and second to approve. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Clue. Other action items and updates, item 8A. This is a reconsideration and discussion for possible action of the 2026 HOT funding apps for the National Museum of the Pacific War and Oktoberfest. And Council, I want to be clear that I am the one that brought this up, not the applicants. We did hear from Dr. Cartier at the end of the last session with some questions that I found pointed and applicable. And the reason is the National Museum of the Pacific War and the Oktoberfest, in all my years as the mayor, have been unique in their ability to create HOT receipts. And since we've decided to rely somewhat on the placer data that CVB is providing, these two applicants particularly, according to the formula that I've been given by CVB, relative to the placer data that shows how many people come to these things, they qualify for more than they apply for. They are unique in their ability to, year after year, I know that we talked about, do we want to continue to provide hot funds to startups? How long? How should they prove that they've been resulting in hot money receipts? But I felt that after the last meeting, especially since we had some other applicants that we found to be eligible probably for less than they applied for, and we had some left over, and you see that the in the memo that we, what did we, 458 was awarded in hotel occupancy tax to 25 applicants, and there was a $23,000 left from what we had budgeted. So I wanted to have the opportunity to bring this back, and my recommendation is that we fully fund the National Museum, which is another 15. Another 10. And the Oktoberfest, another 5, which is a $15,000 addition to what we approved.
Only question I have, I know there were some people that were late, and we were, you know, said you're late, can't get it. And then, of course, I perceived that many of the council members also some complaints about not getting money and trying to show that they did put heads in bed. I don't have a problem with these two, by all means. I just want to bring that up.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the mayor's recommendation of an additional $10,000 to the Admiral Nimitz Foundation and another $5,000 to Oktoberfest.
Second.
Motion second. Questions? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Item 8B, consider the approval of a street closure request. I see Jill's here, been waiting patiently. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm Jill Elliott from Black Chalk Home. I'm here under the unofficial representation for our Lincoln Street Merchants Association's Carol Hicks Fulton, that has everything from the left side Werner's Warehouse all the way down to Mesquite, which is under her umbrella, Josh Allen from Jack and Adam's Bicycles, the cute Victorian on the corner of Creek and Lincoln. And we are proposing a Lincoln Street Merchants Market. We have picked the date of May 9th. Can we get those flyers passed out? I have packets for everybody. Oh, you already got them. Okay. So with the packet, our goal on Lincoln Street is to create exposure and traffic down on Lincoln Street. It's really hard to get people from Main Street to look down these side streets, create a draw down there where we get a population of people who is willing to come and experience our amazing shops down here. We want this event to be a fun, family-friendly, creative market hosted by all of us. We are going to do the hard work and the setup and the recruiting of vendors for this event. We have asked the Chamber of Commerce to help facilitate and sponsor this event, and they have willingly said yes, they will help. They have the staff, the banking, the registration, the website, all of the necessary infrastructure to create this event. And that link will be actually ready at the first of next week, so we can start recruiting vendors and sending that registration link out. I've been talking to Garrett on street closures, which have preemptively been approved. I did notice, Josh did notice on the map, and you'll see that I put a red mark on the top. He had it blocked from Creek Street to in front of Black Chalk, right at the bridge. We really would prefer for this to be in front of Roadies, which was our original conversation. It would need to block the Creek Street access into Lincoln Street. But most people just park and walk to Main there anyways. We do get some traffic, but I think it makes a natural parking avenue for people. They can come on Ufer and park. They can walk across the new walking bridge there. There's parking at Carol's Warehouse and behind Eric Mustard's shop. And so I think it adds some opportunity for parking there as well. If we can get that expanded, it allows more opportunity for 75 to 100 vendors for this event. And I think we just need more land space to be able to accommodate who we want to be there. We want this to be a biannual event. We're anticipating a spring market and a fall, like a Christmas holiday market. We have a TBD on the date for the fall when we kind of said, you know what, this is coming really quickly. It's 8 weeks away. Let's get this one rolling. Let's get some enthusiasm, and then we'll put a fall date on the calendar and see. So we do anticipate this being biannually. We're doing a nominal booth fee of $100. This just gets a small commitment from people. It gets them locked into something, and it helps to cover, if we have 75 vendors, it covers security, insurance, cleanup, bathroom rental is needed, and just that basic stuff. We also want this to be a not-for-profit event. We want to be able to give back to our community in a way. If there's profit at the end of this, we all agree that we want to create either one entity that we give back to, or each of us creates our own entity and we donate a little bit back to three different nonprofits here in town. That also could include maybe some beautification on Lincoln Street, some help with signage, some other things there. I did create a sample of some of the vendors that we've been talking to as far as some of the products that they would provide. We're really looking at creating like a 100-mile radius of Fredericksburg of makers and doers and creatives that want to come to Fredericksburg, create an event that's unlike anything else in town. Yes, we have the farmers market, veggie and food products there. This is going to be less. This is going to be more makers and artisans, people who are doing creative things, less on the food produce side. Do you guys have anything to say? The biggest thing is just, can we look at the road closure aspect on Creek and Lincoln and see if we can get that expanded? And do we have approval to go 100% into this and we'll start recruiting? Thank you.
Jill, that event parking, is that behind a more of a central person from the point that's Warner's and this building next door, is that right?
It is. The parking would be behind
Carol
Hicks Bolton and Mesquite Warehouse.
Okay.
Yeah, there's so many parking spots behind that Werner's location. And so our anticipation, our plan is to come across the bridge, immediately take a right, and there's lots of parking spots back there. They can egress back across the bridge. This doesn't affect the recycle center on a Saturday, which is really good. It gives Shutters opportunity if there happens to be something on a Saturday funeral. It doesn't affect the Diodara, which is the Rockwoods house on the corner. It would just inset off of that probably halfway down that block, really in front of Roadies, and then go in front of Black Chalk. Any other questions?
Jill, I think it's a great idea. And I think it's a great idea. And I'm thank you for coming forward. It'd be neat to see more events like this in town, especially around the Main Street area. But I'm in favor of it.
Super. Thank you.
Jill, thank you for being a pioneer on this. I want things like this to be easy for people to come and get permits from the city. Like, this is beautiful. This is the stuff we love. And thank you, Josh. We visited about this as well. I know we've met. I'd be in favor. I want to hear the safety components. I know we talked about this. You know, what can we do? But I would love to see this be as big as possible on that street, like you mentioned, that, you know, saving Shutters on that side and the recycling center.
So from a staff perspective, we are mostly concerned with public safety, given some of the recent events around the world. So I think we can come up with a plan that works, expanding it to the north of Creek Street. It'll just include a lot more signage, just advance notice. Unfortunately, not everybody pays attention to the advance notice, so they get to the barricades and then they have to figure out how to turn around. So that's why we had proposed this originally. It kind of allows for free flow to the north of the event. But again, we can make those changes. So I will need to work with engineering, PD, and parks again to kind of come up with a revised plan. But really, to get this ball rolling, we just need council's approval of the general street closure. Also in the packet, I mentioned that we'd prefer the council only approve this first event. Jill's mentioning they would like to have twice a year, but let's approve the first one, see how it goes, just make sure there's no major issues, and then hopefully you could come back for further approvals. So again, I think at a staff level, we do support this idea and recommend approval.
I recommend we approve item 8, B, for approval, street closure on Warehouse Road, Makers,
Mark.
Mark it. Second.
Motion second to approve this request as presented. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank you, Carol, and Mel, and Josh, and all the others who have invested in this community for something, a new initiative. I know that you've had some concerns about retail traffic and so forth, and it's just great that you took on an initiative to try to address it. Good for you. It's easy for us to, in my view, to approve this. All the best.
Thank you so much. It's a team effort for sure. You got a lot of hard-working people here that are going to make this a successful event. So thank you so much. Thanks.
Congratulations. All right. Mr. Tim. Are we done?
Yes.
Tim's report.
Sorry. Yeah, the city manager's report, and he's passing the ball today.
Yes, sir. We have Tim Lundberg with us that will give a quarterly EDC update. Tim?
Morning, Tim.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I like your new digs. This is the second one of these council updates, quarterly updates that I've given you. And I think, like I told you last time, my goal is not to go back to the beginning of time and you know, my goal is to present whatever's relevant at that quarter and information that's fresh. My challenge is not finding data. My challenge is trying to, you know, keep this thing reasonably timed. So today what you're going to see is not quarterly stuff for the fourth quarter. You're going to see year-end 25 data compared to 2024, and then some other things. So. The EDC meets in January of each year and does has our annual planning meeting. We did that about 6 weeks ago. Part of the discussion at that meeting is a look at tweaking our annual work plan. And so I thought I'd throw that up there. It's very similar to the last several years of work plans. The only thing that kind of is a little bit different on this page is that line there that says, pursuing quality and diversity in the businesses on Main Street in both the short and the long term. The EDC board and I have felt like, and have had these discussions for a year and a half or better now, we strongly support any efforts that the council can bring forward to try to, I guess, avoid certain businesses or encourage the placement of those in improperly zoned areas and keep them out of certain other areas in the community. And I think, I mean, I looked at the P&Z agenda for tomorrow night. I think you're heading that direction on some of these things. And we're fully supportive of that. The other thing is every year, you know, come the end of the year, there's some shuffling and angst about, are we going to have some prolonged vacancies on Main Street and what's going to happen there? And you know, went through, you know, those concerns again this year. And yes, there was a little bit of shuffling around and pretty much everything is filled back up, which I'm always relieved by. But it seems like every time the deck gets shuffled, we end up with another tasting room. So we've had these discussions at the EDC board and feel strongly that any efforts that y'all can bring forward to try to help influence the mix of businesses in our downtown business district would be probably beneficial for the community. So that's what that relates to. Regulation and oversight. This didn't really change much. This goes back to our efforts to try to control development, particularly out in the county where we lack sufficient control. Labor force issues, for the longest time, this has been labor force and affordable housing issues. And I think we actually dropped affordable housing out of our work plan this year. It's been there probably since before I was in this job. I don't worry so much about our housing situation as I used to. I do continue to worry about our labor force. I think that's our Achilles heel, is being able to grow our workforce to sustain and accommodate the growth that is taking place quite organically, frankly. And then we added the airport development. Those of you who read my report know I'm vice chair of the Airport Advisory Board. I spend quite a bit of my time working on airport matters. Things are really good at the airport. You know, I didn't make the chart with those numbers, but in fuel sales at the airport, they set another record in 2025. They sold over 51,000 gallons of fuel, which was up about 9% from 2024. And of that, between avgas and jet fuel was up more. It was up about 10%. So people with means are still flying into Fredericksburg, which is really, really encouraging. We'll go into some sales tax stuff. This is a report you've kind of seen before. I got it. It's been updated to reflect the 2025 calendar year, which runs November through October. And you'll see in the next couple of slides, the city was down for the reporting year 0.4%. The county was actually up 0.58%. So by and large, it was relatively a flat year, but down significantly from the trend that we've been seeing over the last several years, and then the five-year trend and the 10-year trend. But I think, as you'll see in other things in my report, this is kind of reflective of overall slowing, in our local economy. This looks at our 2025 reporting year by month. And you can see the January report is actually November sales, February is December, et cetera, and running through the December report, which is October actual sales. The red numbers indicate a month where the city was down from that same month in 24. So you look there, 9 out of the 12 months in reporting year 25 were down for the city. 5 out of the 12 months were down for the county. But again, I guess the better news is there wasn't a whole lot of movement any given month one way or the other. So that's how we were able to finish the year off, the city being down 0.4%, the county being up about 0.6%. So this is how we compare to what I consider our peer group. And those are some neighboring communities. Those are other tourism-centric communities, metropolitan areas in the state, and the statewide totals. This is the yellow numbers are worse than our numbers, and there's not a lot of yellow on that page. So moving into where we are right now, most recent numbers that I have is a February report. That's December actual sales. For December, the city was down 5.16%. The county was down 3.16%. So we're 2 months into the 2026 reporting year. The city is down 2.65%. The county's down 1.89%. So the last month, the January report, November sales, the city was up a tick. They were up 0.7%. The county was down about 0.3%. This is year to date, or actually that's February or the December report and year to date numbers. So as bad as our numbers may have initially appeared to you, being down 5.16% in the city, there was a lot of people around the state that were way off compared to us. So I don't feel nearly as bad once I prepared that report and saw what the general trend was for the month. Looking at where we are or where the city and the county are in their fiscal year, by my calculations, we're now 5 months in the 2026 fiscal year, and the city is down 2.57%. year to date versus the first 5 months of fiscal 2025. County's down about 0.4%. Through 5 months.
Jim,
yes.
That looked like when you that report that showed October, November and December of 25, right? Fiscal.
Yes, it's August through December actual sales, but it would be October through February.
So what I'm trying to get at, did November and December pick up comparative?
Go back to that report. No. I think November was up. December was not. That report right here. So the December
was 11% up, right?
Are you asking about the month or the
which,
month
yeah.
reporting?
I'm talking about the month.
Okay.
The month.
So the 11.05%, that was for December of 25, right?
Yes. And I need to explain that because it sticks out compared to everything else. There was a significant audit adjustment that occurred for both the city and the county that month. And so it was kind of a true up of the previous, I guess, year by the comptroller's office. And so that's really how that, I don't think that's real impact. I think that was a true up from an audit adjustment.
Tim, doesn't that happen every year?
It happens every year.
In yeah. December.
And it's money that y'all can spend.
Yeah.
So, it's not a bad thing. Okay. So we're going to get into some of the other quarterly numbers, but again, these are for the year. These are building permit numbers, city issued building permits split between residential and commercial. They were both down. Residential permits were down 12% for the calendar year. Commercial permits were down 46%. Between the two, we're down 20% for the year. Some other kind of county measures. Septic permits issued by the county were down 20%. Well permits issued by our Underground Water Conservation District were down 29%. CTEC new meter installations between residential and commercial, they were off a total of 27%. Went back and looked at Development Review Committee pre-application conferences that we have every week and went back 2 years. So I think I'd alluded to this in my previous quarterly update. The number of pre-apps that we're seeing at DRC every week is slowing down. Went back since then and pulled the 2023 total and the 24 total. We finished the 25 year, so those numbers have come down from 111 in 23 to 90 and in 24 to 77 last year, where we've had 8 weeks so far this year. I think we've had a total of 9 pre-application conferences, so we're averaging about one a week. Only thing that was kind of an anomaly, real estate numbers were up a little bit, which is encouraging. You know, I'm hearing that real estate activity is picking up to some degree over the last several months. And so the top part is the number of transactions split between residential land and commercial. These are transactions that closed through our MLS that were for Gillespie County properties. So altogether, the number of transactions was up about 6%. From 2024. And then the bottom half of that slide is the dollar value of those transactions. And dollar value wise, we were up about 7% from 2024. The only thing that slipped a little bit was land. According to the numbers that I look at, our on average, land prices dropped about $5,400 an acre regardless of size track for the year. And we've dipped just below $20,000 an acre on average for the first time in 4 years. These are the home sales in the city of Fredericksburg. Again, once again, it closed through our MLS and it calculates an average. It goes back to 2006. I use this report a lot. We ticked up a little bit for 25. We average home sale price went from about 587,000 to about 592,000. Both of those numbers are obviously down from where we peaked in 2022. Of note, the Lennar homes, which there's a lot of those closing, those are not in these numbers. D.R. Horton's numbers are in these numbers. So that's creating some of the downward pressure, I think, in these trends. And then prices are coming down also in residential real estate.
Is there a reason they're not in there?
That Lennar's not in there? They don't need to be in there to sell houses. They've got, you know, on-site salespeople and, you know, providing their own financing, and they don't need to be.
So they don't
need
report.
To go to those efforts to market. So
they're not in the MLS.
They're not in the MLS. So if you factor those numbers in, those averages would be, you know, down below what I'm showing you.
What's the price point on those houses? Are they under three?
About three.
Yeah, Charlie.
335.
You know.
Thank you.
Okay. And very thankfully for the Chamber of Commerce, it continues to update our apartment market. These are their summary, including their most recent survey, which was in toward the end of January, going back to mid 2019. So everybody's been watching, and as you read my report, I spend a lot of time talking to apartment developers who are really, really closely watching our apartment market. You know, we, in 2024, we added 611 new apartment units into a market of about 725 apartment units. So, you know, it was a real shock to that market, dropped overall occupancy down to about 70%. And everybody's been watching the leaseback of that, and it hasn't stalled. It continues to creep up a couple of percent per quarter, and we're back up to already about 94% occupancy in our apartment market.
Tim, do you foresee any apartments being built anytime
soon? Yeah, I think we've got two apartment complexes that are getting pretty close and will likely break ground in the next 5 or 6 months.
Do you know how many units that is?
Yeah, one of them is 305 units, and the other one's 240 units.
Okay.
You know, other than that, you know, kind of handicapping that field, I think everything is kind of iffy. But I think those two are probably pretty likely to actually come to fruition. You know, and talking about what's going on, I mean, we're not, as you see, the numbers are slowing down. But we're not out of business. We got a couple apartments that are about to break ground. We've got two hotels under construction. We got another couple of hotels that are in the planning stages. I've got single family home builders, production builders that are looking for acreage on which to, you know, build some more subdivisions. We've got a couple of commercial projects that look like they're really close. A commercial that would be mixed-use office, commercial space that are really close to breaking ground. So things are still happening. Just, you know, overall metrics are coming down. So kind of transition into some tourism lodging type data. You know, I pull numbers from the comptroller's office on gross lodging revenues. That's all your hotel, motel, short-term rentals. And this is not hot numbers, but this is gross revenues. So where we are to date, and that number may creep up a little bit, you know, for 25, the most recent data that's out shows we totaled $123,506,000 roughly for 25, which represents about a 4% decrease over 24. Visitor center attendance, which I don't pay a lot of attention to anymore, but I still track those numbers because they still count people when they come in the visitor center, was off 16%. But I think I've explained, our visitor center does a great job and still serves a real significant purpose. But with all the data that's available on your phone or other handheld devices, it'd be, there's less reason for a lot of people to visit the visitor center for printed materials. So part of the reason that number is probably down as much as it was is 24 had the eclipse and we had kind of a shot of people in town and doing a lot of things. And this is a report that is derived off of the last number, the $123,506,000 number. It's a report I've been doing for since 2018 that goes through and I split out short-term rental revenues from what I consider traditional hotel-motel units, okay? So the trend through last year had been a steady increase in the amount of short-term rental revenues as a percentage of the total. And that reversed this year. We went from, hotel motel revenues went from 24% of the market to 30% of the market. Short-term rentals went from 76% of the market to 70% of the market. Some of that simply had to do with the introduction of the Albert and their room revenues into that market. But I think it also is representative of, in general, short-term rentals are slowing because that market continues to be overbuilt. Now, not necessarily in town. Thanks to the steps that y'all have taken, I think we're going to continue to see those numbers slowly. They've leveled off. I think they'll slowly decline, but the county is simply unchecked. They're still building, and you'll see it in this next slide. They're still building short-term rentals. This is a number of rooms. This is not properties. It goes back to 1994, but it's a split of hotel motel room units and versus short-term rental room units. And when I I have to try to explain to people that ask me, well, what happened to the, our SDR market, I'll pull out this report and I'll show them that, hey, our short-term rental inventory over four-year period of time doubled. And, it's just classic supply and demand. But we added another 179 short-term rentals last year. All that growth is in the county.
Is that units? Is that bedrooms?
Sir?
Is that bedrooms or?
No, it's not properties. It's units. Okay. Not bedrooms, but rental
whatever
units.
They call them. Yeah, units.
Right. Okay. Sure. I think this is my last slide. This is data that the Convention and Visitor Bureau gets from what used to be Smith Travel Research. It's now owned by CoStar. And it shows, I just did 3 years, it shows occupancy as a percentage, average daily rate, that's a dollar number, and then the revenue per available room. Occupancy has trended down a couple of ticks over the last couple of years, but average daily rate is increasing. Again, some of that increase from 24 to 25 was simply the introduction of the Albert and those room rates into that market. And then the revenue per available room is total room revenue divided by the rooms that are available. Not all of the market is in these numbers. The census is 32 properties accounting for 1,440 room units is what they report. So but it picks up all your hotels and some of your B&B properties. And so it's not the complete market, but I think it's a fair representation of part of the market. And that's all I have.
Can you go back to that slide that has the month to month with the red, the 9 months on it?
Sure. That's
a lot. So, yeah, one more forward. Yeah. I wanted to take advantage of Jill and Carol being here because I wanted your perspective. When I see data points, and several of these data points are down slightly, my question is always, are we trending or is this just, hey, they're, like you said, we had the eclipse last year, so maybe that would account for the 5 million-ish in difference in lodging receipts? Or somewhat part of it. The concern, of course, is always that Fredericksburg has now been, there's a tipping point where people might say, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, I'm moving on. So we're always looking to redefine new things to bring people in town as well as strengthening the businesses that are here and so forth. So my overall question, Tim, is when you see these -4, -5, 0.63, 0.46, and so forth, as an EDC director, does that concern you? And if so, to what degree? Is that a yellow flag? Is it a no flag? Is it, oh, this is just the normal ups and downs? We've had it for years and years. There's no reason to look at anything to do differently. And then I want Jill and Carol's perspective.
I'd like their perspective too, because they're the boots on the ground. And we talk about this in my meetings. We talk about this in the chamber meetings. We're hearing reports that these percentage increases, you know, aren't reflective of what's really going on up and down many stores, you know, on Main Street. We're hearing stories of people are off 20-30%. And you know, Jim McCool and I have had this conversation, how do we reconcile those differences? If these numbers are right, they don't concern me all that much. I think we're settling to maybe a new norm. I think I made this point. We've had, going back to 2021, you saw that in some of the sales tax numbers. They've just been, you know, astronomical. We've had a lot of distortion in the market since COVID. You know, we just had this pent-up demand. And we had stimulus money, and then we just had this run-up of freedom, and I think things are settling down, and I mean that concerns some people. I'm not all that concerned about it.
Well, I see that over the year it's 0.4, which would suggest to me that's not terrible, but I'm not in the business.
Yeah,
I don't do what they do. But if every year it's been 5, 6, 7% good, and then all of a sudden it's minus or 0.4, I'm thinking, what's going on? Is it a national thing, a state thing, or a local thing?
I'll get to that, or my opinion of that. I think they shared them with y'all. The CBB pulled some Placer AI data last week that was visitation. We've been using those numbers for a number of years now as the best way that we have available to count people. And so they geofenced Main Street, they geofenced for cell phone data, the city of Fredericksburg and the county. And the estimation of counting of people. I pulled those numbers out yesterday evening and was going through because I had some of those reports from years past. And so I was trying to reconcile some of that information and some of it I was able to, but I didn't make a slide out of it, but I've got it here. By those numbers, over the 3-year period from 2022 to 2025, total visitation, this is estimating visitors, to the city of Fredericksburg has dropped 300,000 people. Over that same three-year period of time, total visitation to the county has dropped 400,000 people. Last year, both of those numbers dropped 100,000 people. Main Street, the geofence of Main Street, it dropped 100,000 people. So I think that's got to be reflective of part of what's showing up in the sales tax is we've got fewer people coming to town. But I think by and large, it's more than that. I think it's, let's just face it, there is a whole lot of uncertainty continuing to go on in our economy. And I think that is, in my opinion, that's the biggest culprit, is people, they still may be traveling, but I think they're being much more judicious about what they spend money on when they get into market. Because everybody's pocketbooks have been affected by inflation, and then the tariffs, and just a whole lot of uncertainty. I mean, we're 4 days into a war with Iran. You know, I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow necessarily. So, to be this close to being even overall, I'm not too worried about that.
Okay. Could I ask Jill and Carol to give your perspective, because I'd like to know from a business person who sees people coming in and out of your store, and you talk to them and you hear them. So, Tim, if you wouldn't mind stepping away just a second I wanted to give them the opportunity. Carol?
I get to talk first since I'm the oldest. I would say that our business has mirrored these numbers I'm seeing. I don't know where you are on that. We were so blessed to live in our beautiful free town of Fredericksburg during COVID, because our business was crazy good. And so we kind of had to talk to ourselves about, we can't compare and despair. That was then. This is now. Our world is different. So yeah, last year was rough. This year, January, February, it's been fabulous.
Oh.
And January, February is historically for us, you tighten your belt and...
Yeah.
You go on vacation. So I'm super encouraged. And I think just with Jill's Thursday night thing that she started, it's like we have to be creative in this world. We have to love each other in our small town. We have to support each other. And we just have to work our tails off, which that's what we do. That's why we're here in Fredericksburg. We get to do our dream. I'm 70 and I still get to go to work every day and love my people and I love my job, and I think you're the same way. Okay, that's my lecture. Your turn.
That's inspiring. Thank you, girls. Jill.
So I think the same. I mean, the red months, definitely last year overall was down. It was pitiful. People were holding on to everything with all their might. They were not wanting to spend anything on any big purchases. I feel like as soon as January 1st hit, we're like, all right, we're going to inventory, we're going to clean, we're going to do all this stuff. And I've let one person go for the whole month. And then all of a sudden, I was like, this explosion of people just saying, I'm over last year. I want the sofa. I'm building a house. It's going to be done. I need to order. So this year has completely shifted in a really positive way. I look at these numbers, and what it says to me is wine tastings. Wine tastings on Saturday bring so many people to town off Main. They leave at 10:30. They jump on one of the mini buses. They come back at 5:15. They are drunk. They're sleepy. They're hungry. They want to shop. And we're predominantly Main Street is pretty much closing around 6. Some of the stores like the Venture, they stay up until 7. To me, that is why we have lower sales taxes in Gillespie, in the city on Main Street, because there are thousands and thousands of people who are going out to the wineries on those Saturdays and those Friday afternoons, and they're not shopping on Main Street like they used to be. We have completely shifted that dynamic of who is coming to town, families, affluent people who are willing to literally come to Fredericksburg to purchase unique items. First and foremost, they come to Fredericksburg to go to the wineries. That's my opinion, and I feel like that's why our sales tax was dropped on the city.
Thank you. Excellent. Exactly what I asked for. Tim, thank you for your report. Council, any questions? comments. Anything else you want to wrap it up with, Tim?
No, sir. I'm good. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Tim, a question about Main Street and Jill, of course, being on Main Street too. But do we have a lot of vacancies right now on Main Street?
I'm not aware of many that are actually for lease. A couple of vacancies are, but that are actually for lease, no. There's been some shuffling, and everything seems to be filling back up.
So that's a question to Jill is on these drunks that are coming back to town. Are Main Street trying to stay open later, or would they prefer to...
I think there's been a shift. I think there's been a shift in stores trying to encourage stores to stay open later. What I do know is we're all mom and pop owners, and we're there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and we have limited staff, and we're tired at the end of the day. And so it's really hard to find people who are willing to create a second shift that comes in at 2 that stays till 8. We just don't have the manpower to be able to manage that. I think that if there was an opportunity for that, absolutely. Like, it would definitely gain more sales. You get those people who are just wandering. You get the people back from the wineries. You get more families who are out waiting for dinner. We've started staying open late, and I would say that it has been financially beneficial for me to stay open on a Saturday night where I leave Black Chalk and I go to Haberdashery on Main for 2 more hours and add a couple $1,000. I mean, it is lucrative. It is worth it to stay open for another couple hours. And if more people knew that and were willing to hire one person to come, or they just shift their hours somehow, then it would be super beneficial. And I feel like it gives a better product to the people who are visiting town as well, because we get the sense of, like, we're turning the key, we're locking the door, and you guys got to go just wander the street. And there's really not much to do between that 5 to 7 hour when they have dinner. So we can encourage more Main Street shops to stay open. I feel like it would be lucrative for them. It would be beneficial to the community, and it would be beneficial to the tourists that are coming.
Well, however, the quote of the day that I will take from you is, they come back to town, they're drunk, they're sleepy, they're tired, and they don't want to shop. So,
or they buy the wrong pair of boots.
So extra labor would not solve that issue, although it might solve some. Is that what I'm hearing? If you were to stay open later.
Staying open later, does it get you paid?
Yeah, they're still going to be drunk, sleepy, and tired.
I don't want to shop.
Now, I have an issue with that. There are people that come back drunk.
Is that an overstatement?
Yes, it's an overstatement.
Well, I took it as...
I was on Main Street Saturday night. I was on Main Street all day Saturday.
Were you drunk, sleepy, and tired?
I was not.
In one order.
But the shops seemed to be very busy. There was a lot of people on Main Street. And I had dinner on West Main and walked home. And there were still a lot of people on Main Street at 10 o'clock at night.
Well, I take that point, and I'm being a little facetious by the quote that you said, because there's nothing you can say that's true of all of them and everything. And we're looking at the generalities. My concern, of course, is that the numbers that Tim's presented, do they represent a trend? Or, as I say, is it the snapshot today? This is not great, but Fredericksburg is great at reinventing and rejuvenating itself. So the next year is just going to be, wow, these numbers are greater than last year and so forth. Because it's all about what we should anticipate and what action we can take to make sure our businesses stay strong, people continue to come visit, et cetera. So that was my basic question, is do you see anything that you say, red flag, we've got to do something. And what I'm hearing from y'all is that last year was not great. This year looks to be better.
It does. I think that's the shift. If we can count on January, February of 26 to be like, this is the precursor to what's happening for the rest of the year, then I think we'll
from
all
your mouth
be very
to God's
happy.
Ears. Right. Okay. Carol, did you have
no crazy circumstances, but yeah, I think so.
Right.
And then I just had one more thing to add, that if we could, like, to me, there's like a Main Street Saturday customer, and then there's these other people that want to have a parking lot. They want to wander through, and for us, home furnishings, they want to really think about it. They don't want it. They're not just slam, bam, thank you, ma'am, go in, get
whatever. So that would be how Fredericksburg could help bring a higher end client in, I think.
Like we used to
have. Is help, yeah, is because, you know, we were on, Homestead was on Main Street for however many years. That was my first store. And super high end, lots of money. And that's what Jill and I are trying to do on Lincoln Street, is we want those wandering, wealthy people from Austin, Houston, all the things. We'll give them a glass of wine.
And so parking, is that what you're
talking? And then, so no, we have parking. And please send people to our parking lot.
Okay.
We have a huge parking lot. We want
make
to share
people
it.
Aware of where there's opportunity.
Like,
okay.
Let us have a sign that says Warehouse Row.
Okay.
You know, and like get people, help people find, get off of Main Street.
Yeah.
To where the higher end stores are. Yeah. Main Street also, but just share the love. Yeah.
Like it. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Anna Hudson, you signed up to speak on economic development. And I get to use my fancy new three minute timer.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Good to see you. It's been a little over a year. Anna Hudson with Landmark Planning and Development Advisors. And happy National Women's History Month. Beautiful new council chambers. I might put something in your ear. Linda Longerhans, council chambers, maybe, in honor of our first female mayor. So it is a good news, bad news issue, right, in the economy today. I was actually preparing for a presentation I'm giving at my alma mater at UT on Friday for a council of alumni. And as they asked me, what's your one piece of advice for upcoming planners? And my biggest piece of advice is always get involved at the local level, right? Planners are great big thinkers and idealists. And my piece of advice to them will be get involved at your historic review board, at your planning and zoning, wherever you can. So I would be remiss if I missed this opportunity. And it wasn't planned. Sorry, Tim, I usually talk to you ahead of time. I would have had your numbers. So I was sitting here watching them as everybody else. So it is good news, bad news. We are 4 days into a war. And that's awful news, except the good news for Fredericksburg is that we are always the anomaly in the world in Texas. I was at a dinner function the other night, and someone said, you know, I'm going to cancel that trip to Europe. It's not looking safe. And that always benefits Texas, or it benefits Fredericksburg, right? When people don't want to go abroad, they come here. So just to put that in perspective, I think you saw some flat numbers, but don't despair. Things are always looking on the up for Fredericksburg. So one thing that I wanted to come and address, because I see it on the rumor mill, on social media, it was out on the neighborhood app. What about the city? Are they incentivizing or working with HEB to relocate? There's a prime piece of property that's been on the market for a long time, and the rumor mill is that there is an incentive agreement or something being worked on to relocate HEB out of the heart of downtown, which, of course, would go against our comprehensive plan, which says that our community wants to be small town and doesn't want to sprawl, doesn't want to look like every other suburban neighborhood or community in Texas. So I just wanted to see if somebody would speak to that so we could squash it, or if it is true to say, well, let's bring in some public input into that, because this body has never been good or never been willing to give any type of incentives. And it's very ironic that I come here a year later and exactly what you're describing is what a tourist district would have been doing already for you, or at least been talking about signage, getting people off of Main Street to your fractured areas now that you have. There's now a West Side group, a group of businesses that are coming together to call themselves the West Side businesses. Now we've got Lincoln Street, and we've got a chamber that's holding their events at the same time that we're having a locals night. So there's a lot of fracturing, I think, in downtown, and your TERS or TIF district might be that way to also unify everybody. So if the city council is considering incentives, I hope it's for redevelopment and infill development, where you've already got your infrastructure, instead of pushing out on Friendship Lane and Highway 16, which is not what the comp plan calls for and not what your public input called for, because we went through that process for a couple of years. So looking forward to the UDC, which hopefully will also make it easier to do infill development. I saw you've got something about multifamily coming up in your next business meeting. So, but AB, the TERS is a good idea. as you heard from your business owners, and just public participation, and squash the rumor mill whenever you can. That's it.
Thank you. Tim, are you finished?
I'm done.
I don't want to cut you off if you have any further
no, sir.
Things to share. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Anna. All right. Item number 10 is items for future agenda.
Coming up at our next regular meeting on March 17th, we have the city designation of storm ready to the National Weather Service. That will be handled by emergency management. Additionally, we have an ordinance that Mick will be providing background opening for our sexually oriented business in Fredericksburg. We have ordinances for SOBs, vape tattoo shops, gaming parlors, multifamily development that Cliff will be handling. An ordinance on development services fees. We're making an adjustment to be more consistent with the surrounding communities, and you'll see that new fee list that Cliff will present. Interim rate adjustment from Atmos Energy that Chris will be talking about. We have a contract renewal for JM Pipeline for our water replacement project, annual project. We have ordinance 2025-53 brush and leaf collection services. If you'll recall, the council tabled this item for the March time frame. So we will be bringing that back to the council for your consideration. That is it for the March 17th meeting. Any questions, comments, additions to that meeting? Coming up on April 7th, we've had a special request for FISD to present their May 2nd, 2026 bond election for a new high school. We'll have a representative here giving that presentation. We'll also have the Native Plant Society making a presentation regarding a Main Street Native Plant project, multi-phased project, starting with a demonstration project. That will be both Jonathan Watt and Alan Kirchhoff. I've been working with both of them. They've also been working on a landscape design for the city hall, so a lot of good information there. We also have an executive session item regarding water rights that Chris will be handling for that meeting. Any questions about April 7th regular council meeting? It's a busy couple of months. Coming up, we have Coffee with the City Manager again next week at the Cardinal Room. Mentioned the regular council meeting, March 24th, Citizen University. That will be Fire EMS and Emergency Management. April 7th, regular meeting, April 8th, Coffee with the City Manager again. April 21st, so we did have a special request to forego a regular council meeting to have more of a work session. So we're looking at having two meetings on that date, special meetings. The first being a joint meeting with the Historic Review Board, a joint meeting with the council and the Historic Review Board. Additionally, we will have a meeting regarding our strategic planning. We'll talk about our strategic plan, get input from the council.
I got a question about that.
Yes, sir.
Why would we have a meeting when possibly there could be three new city council members the following week?
Our terms aren't up yet, so we're still serving until the new people get
sworn why in. Would you do a strategic plan just before the elections?
You've been working on it for months and months.
You've been working on it.
I have not. Staff has.
Tony, if you'll recall, the council directed me to complete this effort prior to the election, so we're working to that end. Currently, I understand what you're saying about the existing council weighing in on community priorities and the strategic plan. This will be updated every year. So with the new council seated, beginning the year every year, probably in the January, February timeframe, we'll go through this exercise with that council and basically update the front end of this strategic plan document to reflect that council's vision for the community.
I disagree.
What date is that, you say?
The 21st, April 21st.
Okay.
And it, you know, it would be an option for the council to have an additional meeting after the election to get input from those new members and update the plan at that time, if you would prefer. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Well, I asked for a specific proposal, a specific date. I didn't get it. Is that what this is?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I would have preferred it before today. Go ahead. Anything else?
That is it.
All right. All right. Is that the agenda before executive session? Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a couple of executive session items to discuss. One is a legal matters update, and another is involves city attorney. Thank you for your attendance today. Appreciate it. Are we going to go back to our fancy?
That's correct. Days? Okay.
recession from the executive session. No further business to be transacted today. Any final comments?
Happy birthday, Mayor.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. My birthday is tomorrow. I was born 73 years ago tomorrow morning at 7:20.
Okay.
In case anybody wants to call.
Catching up with
Thank you all for your good work. Thanks once again, Garrett. This is great. We're adjourned.
Okay.